step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 491. I, as always and forever, am Lisa Sheps. I am joined today by Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Shiro's here with Sheps.
With special guest star appearance by Tracy Schultz.
Hello, Tracy Schultz.
So it's Schultz, Shiro, and Sheps.
It's the three S's, tri-S. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We'll be right back.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, November 14th, 2018. On the show today, we have the Different Stages Company and their production of Great Expectations. And a little later, we'll be talking to Austin Shakespeare with Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Denton, Texas. Stick around.
I gotta see her eyes, the barometer's falling over, she can make it.
Denton, Texas. That's so. We're here. So I don't know if you could understand the lyrics of that song, but it was basically saying cold. Because it's cold. It's wintertime, and I'm very, very happy about it.
People, it snowed in Houston on Monday night, and it has not snowed in New York.
There you go. It's cold. I like it. I am all in favor of the cold that we are here. So I'd like to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar.
Kim knows how to get folky.
So the funny thing is not only is it international, but it is indeed folky.
I know. He knows how to get to and bizarre.
Somewhat bizarre. Exactly. I should say, which I didn't say on the top, that we stream this show live at koop.org, and you can listen to it right there, right live, or you can get it on the podcast after the show at offstageonair.com or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Best place to do
like
it is offstageonair.com because we just appear.
Yeah, you just appear. Just put your
in
name
your
in.
Mailbox.
Anyway, I'm checking in with Nicole. Hello.
Hello.
How was your week? Don't talk about the thing that you want to talk about yet, because we're going to just get to that.
My week was the thing that I'm not allowed to talk about
okay.
yet.
So we'll talk about that in a second.
So I'll talk about it here in a bit, but it was crazy.
Let's introduce the folks that are here in the studio with us. We have Elise Jacobs. Hi, Elise.
Hello.
We have Ann Chickalella.
Howdy.
We have Ev Lunning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Bhopal, how are you?
How you doing?
Oh, wait, hold on. Try that again.
How you doing? I'm doing good.
That's good. There's another microphone just to your right there, which even better. Craig Caney. How are you, Craig?
Hello there.
Hello. Weston?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, it just says, get right up on that.
Hello.
Weston Smith. Yes. And Karen Jambon. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello,
we have
I'm
quite
great.
A crew here.
I was just
here.
About to say, it's like a party.
So I thought I'd start by working out some of my new stand-up routine to see how it works.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be a tough crowd.
Instead, I would like to talk about that thing that you want to talk about, which is the Terrence McNally, the celebration of Terrence McNally's, 200th birthday or something like that?
His 80th birthday.
His 80th birthday. And you were there, and Tracy Schultz was there.
Yeah.
But tell me about it at this point.
First of all, Terrence McNally. Wow. I just want to say, though, how cool it was that this all happened in Austin. We have we're lucky enough that Terrence McNally gave his archives and his paper to the Harry Ransom Center and entrusted all of his work there. And so there was a weekend of events. There was a screening of his new documentary called Every Act of Life. Jeff Kaufman directed a beautiful documentary. Tracy was texting me the minute he got out of it. It just became available to the public. So if you're interested in it, it's available on iTunes and I think video on demand in places.
Yeah. What's it called again?
Every Act of Life.
So people could just take the Google or whatever search engine they
every
like
act
and,
of
and
life
put that in there and find
it. .com the website just for that. But then there was a proclamation. The mayor gave us Terrence McNally Day on Monday. And Councilmember Jimmy Flanagan came and presented that. And, Karen's council member. He's a great guy.
Yeah, Karen, you can actually speak into that microphone.
Well, I didn't want to disturb
her. Oh, and it's hard to get a word in edgewise with Nicole, though, so we take it when you can.
But there was just so many wonderful moments and great stories, and I think one of the best moments was his brother, Peter McNally, and all the kind words that he had to say. Wow, it was just really amazing. I'm going to let Tracy...
Was his cousin Rand McNally there?
No. But I was lucky enough to spend the morning with Terrence McNally and Tom Kerhady, and I just have to say, they are some of the most gracious, kind, wonderful people that are so smart and brilliant, and it just really makes you happy to know that.
Wonderful.
All, you know, to just know that. Yeah.
That is great. Now, Tracy Schultz, you were there. You scored some pretty incredible interviews on the red carpet, I hear tell.
Yes, thank you. Thank you to Nicole.
Who did you speak to?
Well, Terrence McNally. He is.
Who? I'm sorry, I didn't get that name.
Terrence McNally.
Terrence McNally.
He is as nice as like and as lovely as you would want him to be.
Which is great for 200 years old. That's pretty amazing.
Yes, he's very spry, but he's also very giving. He like Nicole said, during this whole weekend was all about him. He made every point to include others.
Wonderful. So you got, I'm just assuming, on the red carpet, you just had just a littlest bit of time with him.
Well, yeah, just had like a couple minutes because everybody was shuffling around and everybody wants to say hi to everybody.
Could somebody say who Terrence McNally is? Because I'm going to break it to you now.
He's this guy.
There are too many people who don't know who that is. So tell us why we're excited.
He wrote a few plays.
Musicals.
Movies.
Johnny.
Frankie and Johnny at Claire de Lune, Masterclass, the book for Ragtime, the book for the greatest musical of all time, The Rink. He's a four-time Tony Award-winning playwright and a huge LGBTQ activist on top of it.
Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Andre's Mothers and Son, Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Gotta be right in the muck.
His repertoire is so large and huge. It's really, he is an American legendary playwright.
Bottom line is, I'm going to go and take the leap of faith that many, many of our listeners know who he was. But thank you, Anne. I think that's
I sat in on a peer panel, honey, in which the peer panelists had to be informed who he was.
And what might be a bit of a surprise is the full Monty.
But now that you've listened to this, you can pretend that you knew about him the whole time.
That's true.
But no, he was very generous, and it's like all the people that were there were very generous in honoring him. They made a point to come to town just to talk about him.
Great. Well, we only have a couple of more seconds left. Just run down the list of people you spoke to.
Well, it's like a certain Cheetah Rivera was kind of cool.
200 years old.
She was nice. She was like, I was like, oh, she's just like this little sweet lady. And then later everybody was like, it's like, that was Cheetah Rivera. And it's like, yeah, that was. It's like, I must admit, it's like my naivete is like kind of helped me a little bit to be able to speak to these people.
So but, Cheetah Rivera.
John Glover, Richard Thomas, it's like, Christy Altomare.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to. She was amazing. And
tell people who she is.
Well, she's the lead is like an Anastasia right now. And she took her one day off, to fly down to Austin to do two songs and then fly back the next day to go back to the show.
That's wonderful. Well, it sounds like an amazing. I am so sorry I couldn't do it. I was in rehearsal.
I know I was bummed, but understand but wow, what a really special night. But that documentary, that's some good stuff.
It's good. It's
again,
good.
You can get information by just googling the documentary name, which
is
called
Tracy's Interview.
Every Act of Life.
Yeah. Well, where will we be able to hear your interview?
I actually have my radio show later today at 8 p.m. here on Co-op Radio, so I will definitely put everything together and have it air, and I'll make sure to share it with everyone here.
That's
and
8
the name of the show.
It's called What's New. It airs at 8 p.m. on KOOP. You can stream it at koop.org.
Yeah, or just don't touch that dial. Just keep listening until
that's
8 p.m.
Well, except it's on the internet, so you do have to stream it at koop.org. That's great. Tracy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy.
Just a little bit jealous when I heard, when Nicole told me the rundown of who Tracy was able to talk to, I went, well, God, I got to talk to my cat.
Richard Thomas said no to him twice, and then Tracy still snagged that interview. I was like, you are a rock star tonight, sir.
I promise not to mention John Boy. So, just talk to me.
Let's talk about the spirit-crushing King Kong. That's by the words of Ben Brantley.
Yes. That wasn't a review, though.
No,
Ben
it wasn't.
And Jesse's was not a review.
Well, and yet it was. we've talked about this. This is the second time in the past few months that the review of a Broadway show was presented in the way of an interview or a conversation between the two critics at the New York Times, Jesse Green and Ben Brantley. Ben Brantley called it spirit crushing. Jesse Green said, "We were hoping in reviewing this together that one of us might have something nicer to say than the other one does, but it looks like our opinions rhyme at least as well as most of the lyrics in the show do."
Ooh. Again, Deadline and Variety are the two people that nailed. I saw the show 3 days before the review. They nailed everything about it. The puppet should be eligible for a Tony, but alas, it is not.
Right. Well, both Ben Brantley and Jesse Green were not as enthralled with the puppet as you were.
They were the only ones.
I've been listening to some of the critics that I listen to online that aren't in this piece of paper. Also, were less than amazed by the puppet, but generally speaking, most everybody loved the puppet and hated just about everything.
Only
else.
The puppet. That was it. No, there was one person did say the thing that I said, that the actual cast was really talented and the dancing was great, but sadly, everything was so bad you couldn't take that
in.
Oh, no.
Right. Yeah. How are ticket sales? Were people there?
They were screaming like Kong was a rock star. Like it was Bon Jovi.
Guess.
Or Bruce Springsteen coming on stage and packed.
It'll be interesting to see how it does moving forward, especially in light of these reviews. But it could, the spectacle of the Kong. But one of the things that I found interesting, and where did I read that? Did I read it in this? Right. So they said, he said, perhaps, this is Jesse Green towards the end of the review, says, perhaps we are mistaken in applying Artie's standards to the cynical product of an ambitious entertainment company.
What was the budget?
I'm afraid, Mr. Kong, you are no Spider-Man.
They made most of their, and I don't know the name of the company, unfortunately, but they made most of their stuff from animatronic arena shows. And it said the sales, the drink was Kongapolitan.
Oh, no, my brother had the Skull Island iced tea. There was multiple different drinks.
Well, I know, but this was the...
Do we know the budget for the show? Do we know what the...
It was $35 million, I believe.
Pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It has gone through a slew of different writers from the time it was in Australia. It was originally written by... oh my God, I just lost his name. I'll come up with it.
Sadly, the gentleman who wrote the book for this most current version just recently won a Tony for writing Harry Potter.
Right.
And the Cursed Stone.
And the current composer is currently... what's the word I'm trying to come up with? He did the show that's in Chicago right now called... Beetlejuice. It's not in Chicago. It's in D.C.
Oh, yes.
Beetlejuice.
Yes.
And
the
also
music. Yes.
The music. Yeah.
The puppet's really kind of cool.
Well, it's interesting that the reviewer I talked to who saw what I saw about the puppet, which came from the New York Times, and he was like, he said, I was so jazzed to go see this thing because what I saw in the New York Times was so amazing, but he didn't feel that way when he saw it in real life. So he did see it after you, so maybe he saw something different.
Maybe he didn't sit close to the puppet like I did to get down with the puppet.
Maybe he didn't. Get down. The other opening we had was Mike Birbiglia and his show called The New One. Which, interestingly enough, is the new one. Did anybody see Sleepwalk With Me, the movie?
I did. It's amazing.
Yeah.
He's one of the best stand-ups working today.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. He's great. And people will know his voice if they ever hear him. He's a veteran of This American Life. He was on there quite often. And then he did Sleepwalk With Me, which is kind of autobiographical about his problems of sleeping and sleepwalking and walking out of windows of hotels.
Well, crashing through them, exactly.
And this one continues on his autobiographical journey, and it talks about his being a father. And he got the notices were more or less really, really positive. I'm going to read you the beginning of Ben Brantley's review. It says, "If Mike Birbiglia were a piece of furniture, he would surely be a well-worn, deeply stained, slightly squishy couch, much like the one he describes at the beginning of the new one, his winning Broadway debut at the Court Theater. That may not sound like a flattering comparison, but Mr. Birbiglia has great respect and affection for this kind of sofa, and so should you." So it's a one-man autobiographical piece directed by Seth Barish. So pretty good. He's been taking some heat from the feminists a little bit.
I was about to say,
because he talks about himself as a father, how he doesn't have a role, and he actually has a traditional view of fatherhood. And the gender binary rules that we have, many of us have grown up with. He continues those on, and he's okay with that, I guess. But not everybody is.
Well,
so here's a word that was used that I had to look up.
You know what's so funny is that the last few years I'm like, I haven't found a few words lately. So
here's a word.
I love you. Found one.
So it's solipsist.
Solipsist. Yes, solipsism.
Yeah, what is it?
It's the idea that I'm the only thing that is real, and that you guys are all figments of my imagination.
Yeah,
to an
so
extent.
Why couldn't he just said that?
I'm always here, but you guys go away.
So I think of a baby in a crib.
I think of a baby in a crib.
No, but that's how I teach solipsism. It's like you're just there, and everything in the world is your thing. Yeah.
There you go.
That's okay. A great. Yeah, I like that.
Cool. Anyway, it looks like a good show. And I want to do a little tag on to this. We've had in the past few weeks, we talked about, what's her name?
Which one?
You know her. She's playing Liza Doolittle right now.
Oh, Laura Benanti.
Laura Benanti, who was doing her job by not breaking character.
And got a whole article about it
and
in the paper.
And last week, we talked about somebody who, in my opinion, didn't do their job. Who was that?
That was Glenn Close yelling at the jackhammer on the other side of the wall.
So here we have Mike Birbiglia. Birbiglia, who was kind of doing his job.
Yeah.
So he also didn't break character because he's playing himself. And there is no fourth wall. So I have no problem with him stopping and criticizing the audience.
Well, he's a stand-up comic.
And he's a stand-up, which is what you do.
It's part of the shtick. Yeah.
Yeah. So he did that several times. And he at one point stopped the show because someone was texting. And he said, maybe don't text during my show. And then somebody else in the mezzanine was recording. And he said, well, I see you too. Anyway.
He's no Patti LuPone, let's face it.
No, he's not. There is, in the New York Times article, which you can get at offstageonair.com once I post the show, you can actually hear some of these things because we've got links to them. So that's that. So we're going to have to blast through the next couple of things that I want to talk up. But I do want to talk about this real quick. The Fiddler on the Roof that we've been talking about.
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. The Yiddish version of The Fiddler on the Roof.
Yep.
Alex Alford saw it.
Yeah.
Who saw
really?
It?
Alex Alford saw it.
Oh, God, I want to see it so bad. Well, it's
moving.
It's closing on December 30th in its current location. And as a spoiler alert, Nicole just said it is moving to.
But where's it moving?
Off Broadway.
Yeah.
It's moving to, I forgot the name of what it is, but it used to be called The Little Schubert. And it's. It's
that theater formerly known as the Little Schubert.
Now it's right. The Big Schubert.
And it's never, it's had a troubled past. No, there have been no hits in that show. But anyway, just to give folks a little idea of what you might be hearing, let's listen to this. Okay. Who can get what that is just from listening to it? It's a tradition. So I'm just really excited about this. This means I might get to see it in January when I'm in New York.
See? It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Also in the same, that was from a Michael Riedel article. And he also talked about Jerry Mitchell, who is workshopping a show called Becoming Nancy. Has anybody heard about this one?
We talked when this was in first, like, It May Happen, we talked about it.
Well, that's where it is right now. It's in that kind of thing where It May Happen. And Becoming Nancy is about a boy who's cast as as Nancy and Oliver. Mm-hmm. And it sounds just really lovely. The score is by George Stiles and Anthony Drew, who wrote a little bit for Mary Poppins. Speaking of Mary Poppins, guess where I'll be December 16th?
At the movies? Just
yes,
Mary
I
Poppins.
Cannot wait. That's it. That's the end of that story. And I'm going to bring one other thing, another little audio hit that I just want to share with you. There was Kerry Washington is on Broadway right now. Yep. And just to give you an idea of Jerry Mitchell is the director of the show that she's doing. Well, just listen to this and we'll talk about it.
It's not sports, but is it true that your director on American Son will make you do push-ups if you're late?
It is very true. So, not only you, he makes everyone do push-ups.
Oh, no.
So you never want to be late because then everybody's mad at you because everybody has to drop and do 20.
And this is an actual thing that's happening in this day and age.
Yeah, yeah, Kenny Leon.
Wow.
That is my torturer's name. No, he is the best director ever. And his grandmother used to say this thing, everybody in the bed or everybody on the floor, meaning like you're in this together. So, and he says, because he's a fantastic, very acclaimed director, so he's like, don't feel ashamed of doing push-ups. Denzel has done push-ups with him. Felicia Rashad has done push-ups. And now Kerry Washington.
There you go. Well, you all look fantastic, so it's working.
Oh, good.
Hold on. You were not on microphone when you said that. So he was going to call his equity rep. Absolutely legal, and the equity rep would have nothing to say about it. But I kind of like that idea. As someone that works with a lot of people, I've got a huge bugaboo about people being late. And I just love that. And I did say Jerry Mitchell, who we had just talked about previously, but I meant Kenny Leon.
Yeah, I hope you haven't given Karen and Ann any ideas here.
Yes. Yeah, well, I hope I have. I mean, I find that frustrating. We always give the speech on first day of rehearsal. If you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time. And that's how I've always done it. And so it's important. Anybody else want to chime in?
No.
I mean, life happens, and I think we have to make adjustments for that, especially in a city with traffic like Austin.
I think it's
you know
important
what,
to
Bo,
start.
I am always on time, even with the traffic on Austin.
Yeah, well, because we live in Austin, you should know you have to add extra time.
It's not my driving I'm worried about. It's the driving of other people.
I know, but you have to calculate extra time for
being in a wreck, for the crashes.
For not knowing what's going to happen with the crazy and not knowing what's in front of you.
There you go.
So I have a...
I will always leave 2 hours early with an extra pair of underwear on.
Thank you. Karen, it sounds like you wanted to say something.
I have an anecdote about an actor years and years ago when I was directing a show here, Betty Summer Vacation, and every night he would be at about 15 minutes late. Well, he didn't come on for a while, so and he was a relatively new actor, kind of fit the role, kind of a hunky guy, not too smart on stage, and slightly smarter off stage. And so every night he would be, he'd be slightly late, but he was a charming guy. He did all of his work. And at some point we were talking about call, you know, your call is 7 o'clock. Yeah. And somehow he understood finally what a 7 o'clock call meant. He did not understand that call meant that's when you're supposed to be at the theater. The reason he was late was because we were using a theater term that he had never heard before.
Oh my.
My bad. But he was not the brightest bulb in the package.
Still, and when you say call, if you're an actor, you know when you have to be. So I operate on the principle of how I did in New York on Broadway, and call is always half hour. Yeah. If you need an hour to get ready for your show, you be there an hour before. But you're not going to get in trouble until half hour at my theater. So come on, work at my theater. I give you an extra half hour. So tonight, something very exciting is opening in New York City at City Center. Nicole, you know about this, yes? She's coughing, Nicole's one of Nicole's. You have so many favorite shows, it's crazy. But
oh,
Chorus
this
Line.
This is like one of my diehard Chorus Line. OMG.
So there's a wonderful article in how, it's called How a Chorus Line Veterans... it's weird because it's different tenses because it's a Chorus Line, not Chorus Line is the
right
title. How a Chorus Line veterans pass it on to a new generation. It's talking about how all around the country. Bob Avion and Bjork Lee are going around staging a chorus line, and it is typically done different from most shows. When things go out for release, you just the company produces it the way they want to produce it. Not so much with chorus line. Generally, it is the
original concept.
The original concept, and Bjork Lee.
I mean, what are you going to change? You're going to take people off the line?
No. The line could be...
It's in space.
Well, no, chorus line, the way it is staged is a very conceptual way, the way it's staged, not necessarily, you know, you could still have a chorus line and have it staged differently. Yes. Because I would think that you'd have to have the line at the very least. Yep. Grab that microphone, Karen.
Why?
Because you're talking and we can't hear you.
It's probably best that way.
No, it's never great that way. Anyway, I think it's fascinating that they do it. And I never really... thought about the fact that, I mean, I knew it, but, you know, inside, but I didn't think of it outside, that it is. It's one of the few shows that is always done with the...
The brilliance of Michael Bennett.
Yeah, with Michael Bennett's
face.
That's
really the end.
I was lucky enough, I worked on a production that one of the cast members who played Sheila, Debbie Pigliavanto, directed it, and we did all the original choreography and staging.
Wow. Right.
And she brought in a lot of the original production to work on it. I played Deanna Morales in it that time.
Yay.
And it was, I still can remember a lot, and I'm like, I know the Michael Bennett choreography. It was pretty cool.
As do many, many other people, evidently, because that's what they bring
and
to
it's
it.
Fun. Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of like a sorority shaker or something like that. You know, someone knows it and breaks out into it. It's kind
of
cool.
One of my best friends in New York goes to a dance class with Donna McKechnie still.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
She's awesome.
So the interesting thing about this is part of them working with companies is teaching the history. And as most people know, the show came out of what we now call Devise, but it was called workshopping at the time. Yeah. And Michael Bennett would have people over to his apartment. They'd just tell stories about the chorus. At the time, they were called Gypsies.
Well, they also had that weekend where they locked themselves in the dance studio, and that's the majority of the tapes from that weekend.
It started in his apartment. But what's interesting is most of the characters, some of the actors in the original played themselves, and I'm using air quotes, and some didn't. But Bjork Lee played Connie, who was herself, and so when she's out staging this thing, she's able to tell the story of how her story got on stage, and she is that person.
He cast a few people. He did not cast them as themselves.
Correct.
That's crazy.
All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to a little bit more of that, not more of, we're going to listen to that fiddler piece again, because this is when I really meant to play it, and we'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's Shiro.
And Sheps. We are here. You're listening to us at KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org. We've been having lovely conversations with Karen Jambon, Wesley Smith, Bo Paul, Weston. See, I still have Wes, and I have to add the thing with my mind, which
it's
doesn't
like
work.
It's like a hotel.
Bo Paul, Craig Caney, Ann Chicalella, Elise Jacobs, Eva Lunning, and not Zach Thomas. But he's on the list, so we'll just say his name. And now we're going to switch gears and talk about Great Expectations, different stages production. I do want to say before we get into this that it's so exciting. We have between Austin Shakespeare and different stages, these are some of the stalwart theater companies in Austin.
On the wart.
Yes, they're warty. Norman would love that, wouldn't
he? He would love that. Yes.
It's so exciting to have these two stalwart production companies here in the studio all at the same time. So, and then
I agree.
So that Thank we you. Don't interrupt when we get into conversation, let's just go ahead and do our random legal ID right at this very
and
moment, shall we?
Who will it be today?
I don't know. Let's see.
Hello, I'm Leroy Reams, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM.
Leroy Reams.
That's funny. I actually had a conversation about him with Morgan like a week ago. Random. That's random.
Wow. So let's talk about Great Expectations. Here with Great Expectations is the director, Karen Jambon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We have Weston Smith of the hotel chain. Yes, here. We have Craig Caney.
Hello.
Of the Smithfield Caneys. Yes. And Bo Paul.
Hello.
Hello. So
You know, we talk a lot about my favorite author here on this show, who is one Charles Dickens.
Really?
Yes, yes. I love Charles Dickens.
Me too. Welcome to the club.
Great Expectations. What a wonderful piece. Tell us about this show, Karen.
It's huge, and I never appreciated how huge it was until we got into Tech Week. So the fact that I'm up here alive and not dead is amazing. But you know, the book, which obviously you do. Yes. I mean, you've got 400 and something pages of description
it's a big
people,
book.
Huge
and
character.
Every high school senior in the world is like forced to read it, and that's unfortunate because I think they don't appreciate it.
It only takes us an hour to condense 200 pages.
Yeah, it's amazing because I read probably 8 to 9. Different stage adaptations before choosing the one that we did.
There are that many?
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
Oh my gosh. And then I spoke to people like our lovely Bob Tolero, who went ahead and adapted his own version many, many years ago. Because he's Bob Tolero.
That's true.
I was gonna say, so Bob.
He's awesome. And it's hard because if you love Dickens and you love the book the way I do, you want everything to be on the stage. Well, we would be doing a week's worth of stage.
Sure.
And so I found the one that had, to me, the elements I liked the most. Mm. Although, you know, certain characters were left out, like the villain Orlick. Mm. So I managed to have him mentioned, although she never mentioned him. I managed to have him mentioned at least. So it's just, it's huge because you have to give up things that you love about Great Expectations in order to make it accessible to today's audiences.
Sure, and there's also a bevy of characters in the book. So I'm assuming we have people that are double and triple cast?
Why, yes. Why, you have a couple of them right here.
Well, excellent. Well, let's talk about that right now. Let's talk. Start with Weston. Tell us, tell everybody your name and who you play.
Oh, hi, I'm Weston, and I'm playing young Pip and old Pip. So
young Pip and old Pip.
Whole story.
Love Pip.
I do love Pip.
Who doesn't?
Philip Pirrip.
Craig Caney, who are you playing?
I'm playing, Pumblechook, and I get confused.
Agent
because
P.
I've the aged parent and
messenger?
Porter, messenger. I get confused because I was also reading other characters when other people didn't show up.
What?
So, yeah, that was basically
they should do
it.
Some push-ups.
Yeah. But those are the big ones.
And Bo, what are you playing?
The lawyer Jaggers and the convict Copyson.
Yes.
Cockbeeson.
Yes.
Cockbeeson.
So
the characters are so good in this. They really are like meaty good.
Yeah. So it's hard. It would be difficult for me to think. A lot of times we'll talk, especially if people are doing Shakespeare, we'll talk about what time period did you put it in or any of these things, and we'd say, did you change anything? But it would be like, I would assume practically impossible, if not stupid, to do that with Dickens.
You know, I actually considered it.
The Quran version, the film version, is not bad.
I actually considered it. I mean, I thought, you know, you could set it during the 1890s. You could do a lot of things with the jazz age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was...
What an interesting...
There's some really interesting things you can do with that.
Well, they did. There's a film version that came out, I think, in the 2004, 2005.
The Gilded Age. Yeah.
Hawk, Ethan Hawke.
Yes.
Ethan Hawke.
Maybe I'm a purist, but also working with our wonderful costume designer, Jennifer Rose Davis. She's amazing. Mm. And she said, let's keep it in 1840 because that was the men's fashions were much, much more fun than they were when Dickens actually set the play, which is like 1860. So 20 years made a huge difference in the style of the men's clothing. So yeah, so we kept it pure.
Great. Well, now you guys are set to do a little scene from the show.
Yeah, a
aren't
little
you?
Scene because this play moves so fast. There are 47 different little scenes in this play.
Whoa!
And I may be undercounting. And so everything depends on a ton of people. So we're just doing a small scene between our Jaggers and Pip and Jaggers' assistant Wemmick. And so we'll start with that.
So this is Weston Smith, Beau Paul, and Craig Caney doing a scene from different stages production of Great Expectations.
Happy birthday, Mr. Pip. He's here.
Well, well, 21 today. Is that not the case?
Guilty, sir. I confess to being 21.
Tell me, Pip, what are you living at the rate of?
I don't know.
I thought as much. And now it's your turn to ask me a question.
Have I anything to receive today?
I thought we'd come to that. Take this piece of paper in your hand. Now unfold it. What is it?
It's a banknote For £500?
And a handsome sum of money, too, you agree?
How could I do otherwise?
It is yours. And at the rate of 500 per year, and no more, you are to live until your benefactor chooses to appear.
Is my benefactor to be made known to me today?
As to when that person decides to be identified, why, that's nothing to do with me. I am only the agent.
But she told me that...
She?
My patron?
Ha! You cannot trick me into giving evidence, young man. Now, excuse me. I'm off to court.
The following Sunday, Pip made a pilgrimage down to Walworth to see Mr. Wemmick, for he had an idea about how he would like to spend the at least part of his money.
That's it. Suspense is killing you.
That's it.
Okay.
We were just about to get to the part where I came in as the aged parent.
And those are just about how long the scenes are. Like, yeah, they're yep. just... Yeah. You
so are they
Pip
narrated? So they're,
all
these.
Yes, the other challenge is that this particular version is full of narration, much like Pip narrates in the novel.
Right.
But this narration is done by an outside, a third-party narrator. So we have divided the narration up among all of the cast members, except for Pip. He's only because he has enough to do.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough lines.
He rarely has 2 seconds off stage.
So, Weston, I have a question. Have you ever played a character that has a palindromic name before?
wow, I don't think I have.
Yeah, see, these are the kind of hard-hitting questions you get on Offstage.
Yes, but you know what? He really stopped and thought about that.
I had to
go through
my resume.
Like, that was sincere.
Oh, wait, no.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. Y'all are doing this at the Vortex.
Yes, we are.
Which is a relatively small stage, and it seems like a very big show.
We make it big.
Hooray, hooray. Yeah. Yes to both of those things.
And who is doing the scenic design?
Anne Marie Gordon.
Lovely.
Who is a
we love
genius.
Her. And she knows that stage.
And she
really
knows
well.
That stage, and she knows how to work with it. Mm-hmm. And she is amazing in the things that she can produce and that she can visualize. And I just go, uh-huh. 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 Oh, okay. And I think, okay, I'll understand it when I see it. So
there
you
go.
There's a certain amount of faith there.
And so this is very exciting for you to do it. So in the choosing process, you said you were looking at different
versions.
Adaptations. Mm-hmm. Was this something that Norman chose for his season and then asked you to figure out which one to do? Or was this something that you came to Norman and said, I have to do Great Expectations?
No, Norman, Norman loves to look at his season and balance it out with, you know, the old, the new, the mm-hmm. tried,
the borrowed and
true,
blue.
That, yeah. All of that, yes. And so, and again, he tries to tailor the plays to the theater that we're going to be in because we are different stages.
You know what?
You didn't realize that till now.
I just got it.
Amazing how that works.
Norman
yes.
can never have his own space.
That's right. Ever. He'll have to do that. Then it would be same stage, and that doesn't work. And so, you know, he looked at the Vortex, and he thought, okay, we can do this play there. And so he chose me and asked me if I was willing to direct it. And then he gave me all of these versions, as only Norman can, and piled them on. I thought, I'll never make it through. So I was sitting there, my early summer was spent with the novel and all these versions and paging through.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. And it was fun and I loved it and I loved rereading the book again.
Okay. Do you remember what the earliest like adaptation was?
About 30 or 40 years old, actually. And I mean, and we didn't even hit half of them. We just didn't.
I suppose it was probably.
So in our last few seconds, is there anything that you guys want to share as performers in this piece about what it's like to work on this show? Anybody?
Karen's watching us.
Why are you looking at me?
I think it's so wonderful because splitting up the narration the way that we do, it really is such an ensemble piece. We're all working together to tell this, to tell Pip's story and to tell the story of what happens when you get the rug pulled out from under you and when you expect too much or when you're expecting... Too little. Yeah.
So. Which, oddly enough, it's very apropos for what's going on in our world today.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of themes which will resonate with you if you are living in 2018.
That hits us a lot, too. I mean, you know, Dickens was such a social commentator about his times, and we all know from A Christmas Carol, but all of his novels look at that. And then we talk a lot about, you know, what are the parallels to what's happening in the world today. So hopefully we can offer a little, sort of just a little happy time.
Exactly. And so when, you're opening this weekend, yes?
We are opening this weekend. Okay. Friday. Goodness.
Friday, you open Friday, and when do you close?
4 weekends from now.
December 8th.
Yes, thank
I'll
you.
Just say that. And you're playing at the Vortex. Where can folks go to get more information?
at our website.
Which is differentstagestheater.org.
Thank
you. Okay. Well, great. Thank you guys so much for coming on. Hopefully a few of you can stick around and join us backstage. If not, we'll see you next time you're here.
All right.
Great.
Thanks, guys.
That was Karen Jambon, Weston Smith, Bo Paul, and Craig Caney of Different Stages production of Great Expectations, opening November 16th, playing through December 8th at the Vortex. For more information, differentstagestheater.org. We'll be right back. This magic moment will last me forever. Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage In on the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
It is Shiro and Sheps and Sheps and Shiro.
Sheps and Shiro, the two of us. So we just have a very short while to talk about a local. And I'm just going to, you know what? All we're going to do is today in theater history.
Oh.
Oh, I was hoping you would say something.
I had one thing I wanted to mention that I didn't mention earlier that's local is these archives of Terrence McNally are at the Ransom Center.
Okay, great.
Through January, okay. So that you can see them.
Awesome.
All.
Cool. Ransom Center for Terrence McNally. That's great. So 1905, we're going to start there. Do you remember that?
It was a warm year.
Yeah. So Blanche Bates. Anybody know that actress? Yeah, I looked at Anne because she knows everything. I never heard of her
it
either.
It sounds like a familiar name. Why should we know her?
I don't know, but she did a show called The Girl of the Golden West, produced by David Belasco, mm-hmm. And it was composed by one Giacomo Puccini, etc. In 1945, Ralph Bellamy starred as a presidential candidate trying to present a happy facade to voters. In State of the Union. This was written by Howard Lindsay and Russell Krauss. It played 765 performances in 1945.
Wow. I thought it was later.
Won a Pulitzer Prize. And there was a film in 48 with Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, directed by some wannabe called Frank Capra.
Oh, I wonder if he went anywhere.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a lot of performances.
700?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So in 1996... there was a notable revival that opened. Do you remember what it was?
I know what it is.
What
I'm
is it?
So excited about it because it's that great composing duo at When Candor and Ebb, Chicago.
Right.
Today is the day.
Directed by and choreographed by Bob Fosse.
Yep.
Sorry, directed by, choreographed by Anne Reinking. May as well be Bob Fosse.
Yeah, I was about to say she did all this choreography, and I was actually there on this night that it opened with one Anne Reinking and Bebe Neuwirth and Joel Grey and OMG was everything.
Right, and James Naughton was also in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 1996. And in 1999, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was staged with Matthew Broderick, Mia Farrow, Uta Hagen, and Jonathan Pryce.
I was like, this was the Uta Hagen,
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see. That we're going to turn the page, and we're going to go to 2003 is the death anniversary of Dorothy Loudon,
really?
Who, among other things, originated Miss Hannigan and Annie.
Yeah.
Well, she was also, I didn't realize this, and I must have seen her. She was in the original Noises Off.
Was she really?
In 1983. She was in the Broadway production. So I saw her because I saw it. She was also in Michael Bennett's Ballroom.
Mm.
So another one of your shows that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, well.
In the same thing.
Michael
this
did
is,
some good work.
This is the 10th anniversary of Chicago in 2006.
Another Candor and Abbey.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they moved when it...
I think they could have just put every year. This is the 11th anniversary of Chicago.
It would also moved... When it opened in 96, it was at the Schubert, and then they changed theaters, so I think they made the new anniversary again. I don't know.
Right.
So they were double counting stuff, but
in 2013, it was the opening of the off Broadway production at second stage of Little Miss Sunshine, which didn't really.
Oh, I remember that it did not do well.
No, not very well.
Nope.
Not because of the cast, because they had Will Swinson, Stephanie J. Block.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. And this is also
they needed
debut.
Millie Shapiro. That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what they needed. In 2016, this is the debut of the Grobsters.
I'm
Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1865.
Yeah, you know the Grobes is touring with Idina right now.
Okay.
Can you imagine Idina and the Grobes together? It's such an odd combination and so exciting at the same time.
I should also say one of the other local things I want to talk about, and I forgot to, is Men on Boats at St. Edward's. And you can get more information about that at stedwards.edu/theater.
Theater.
theater. So we're going to take a break and come back and learn everything there is to know about cats and roofs.
Don't forget the hot tin.
This is also, by the way, and I'm not looking at it, but Elf opened on this day.
I was supposed to say anniversary of Elf.
Yeah. So let's listen to Elf, shall we?
Men has always been.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Yes.
Just
hello.
The two of us.
Just us.
The two of us.
We can make it if we try.
Just two of us. Etc. You and I.
You and I.
We've had
That's a good song. I like that you put that in my head.
There you go. So let's switch gears and talk to Austin Shakespeare and talk about a cat on a hot tin roof.
Another good one.
And I'm going to reintroduce people in opposite order, so we end with the Coco.
The Coco.
So here
the
we
finale.
Have from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Mr. Ev Lunning. Hi.
Good afternoon again,
Elise Jacobs.
Hello.
And we are joined by Zach Thomas.
Hi, guys.
We introduced you earlier today, even though you weren't here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
No, it was
you
great.
You just didn't get to say hi.
You said
but
some
you
really
here,
interesting
but
things.
You weren't here.
And the incomparable Ann Ciccolella. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for being
so great
had.
To be here.
So, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, written by Tennessee Williams, I hear.
Who?
Tennessee
Who's
Williams.
Who's that man?
Tell us about Cat on a... I mean, I can't imagine that people don't know what this show is about, but give us the nickel tour.
Well, you know, the generations change, Lisa.
That's what I'm told.
So Cat sort of followed the big hits of Tennessee Williams, Glass Menagerie, and Streetcar. And ironically, Austin Shakespeare's done those two. Before I got the job, they had done Glass Menagerie. And when I came into interview for the job, I said, well, if you've done Glass Menagerie, you can do pretty much anything. So, you know, we do more than Shakespeare, and Williams is, you know, part of our success. And we had a great experience with Streetcar. And Cat, you know, people know there's a movie.
They do.
And Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor are just amazing.
It's got some pretty hot people in it.
Yep. Yeah.
But what they don't know is that the movie is a whitewash of what the play was. And that the play also was adapted for Broadway, and Williams then later in 73 did a production with Elizabeth Ashley, who he adored, in Stratford, Connecticut, at the American Shakespeare Theater there, and we're doing that version.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little more ambiguous. The homosexuality comes to the fore more, but it's surprising what you would think would happen. You know, I said in my director's notes, it is Ev who plays Big Daddy, who's sort of the vulgar redneck, who really has the most expansive view in the play.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that is really interesting when you,
You know, so it's what you would expect. You know, Gwen Kelso is back, and she did our Blanche.
Right.
And she's doing Maggie. So it's great to have that sort of sexy relationship with Brick, who doesn't want to have sex, but we don't really know why, but he's getting drunk, but what's going on? So I want people to sort of come with a fresh look at it, because we're trying to take a fresh look at it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, Ev, you're playing Big Daddy.
That's right.
Who are you playing, Elise?
Big Mama.
Big Mama. And I'm guessing you're playing Brick.
I'm Brick.
Yeah, because I don't guess that because of the way you looked when Ann started talking about Brick. I don't know.
I wanted to jump on that.
You did. You
wanted to. I may have looked that way.
Wanted to jump on it. Brick.
Everything,
I just
by
think
the way,
that's
is,
a great name.
All one syllable names all are two names. Syllables, so it's Brick.
Brick. Okay, not where I come from.
All the names in this are good names. They really are.
They are. Well, Big Daddy is three syllables. Yeah. Big Mama is three syllables.
Uh-huh. And we do have children who yell, Big Daddy. You have to experience that. You forget the no-neck monsters, you know.
I do.
Very much part of it.
I do remember the no-neck monsters. So what's tell us about working on this production. Ev, how has it been for you?
Well, it's a huge challenge because Big Daddy is long-winded. He's been released from the curse of thinking he had cancer. And so all of that thought that he's done in the 3 years previous comes out in a torrent.
He needs to bloviate. He needs to get all that out. People need to learn from his wise and sage.
Well, and he learns from the situation. At one point, he says, "I'm wiser and sadder from this experience I've just been through." So he is trying to share the wisdom and the sadness. But also, his arc is he wants to find out what's wrong with his beloved son, Brick.
Right.
And he wants to dig out that secret. And that's his
and so
arc
how is
the story.
So for those of us that are familiar with the piece and in finding a more nuanced way of this character with this adaptation or the new version that Tennessee Williams did, how is that for you? Because it goes against what most people are going to be expecting.
Well, he has a line that he's at the confrontation with his son. He says, "There's one thing that you can grow on a big place more important than cotton is tolerance, and I grown it." So that's the key thing that he has to express. He's not the threatening patriarch that he looks to be in the beginning.
Good for him. And Big Mama, what about you?
Well, I don't know about that. I think Big Mama's perspective might be a little different. This has been just an awesome experience. And I think the thing that's come to me throughout the process is just how incredibly luscious the words are. This has been the easiest time I've had memorizing lines because they just roll off your tongue. And it's just the natural response every single time you open your mouth. So it's been super.
But, well, they've always said that nobody writes women's roles better than Tennessee Williams.
It's just crazy good. And I we've called her the sort of Tennessee Williams Edith Bunker.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Right. This kind of like,
but you know, I wanted to say the surprising thing that Elise does is she goes from that sort of dimwit to being really strong,
right.
To being really sympathetic,
yep.
Charming.
Yep.
So it's all not, you know, one of the things I read in research was somebody had the idea of doing a Tennessee Williams theme park.
Oh my God.
No, it's seriously a Tennessee Williams theme park right when he died. So where? In like that Mississippi area.
Oh,
or Florida. Okay. But, you know, those characters you think you know, but then you see them afresh and, uh-huh. and you're sort of surprised at how rounded they uh-huh. are.
Absolutely, yeah.
There we go. And so finally, Zach, let's give us some of your insights into Brick.
Well, I think I've done away with all of the assumptions that I had about the character coming in. I guess I had made choices on who he is when we entered the rehearsal process, and now this idea of things being ambiguous by the end, that idea resonates for me more, that
right.
that Williams isn't trying to give you an answer, whether, you know, what his sexual orientation is or what the, you know, the truth of the history of this family. He's just trying to insert you into the drama and the truth of this moment with this family and get you to feel that and taste that, as opposed to, you know, answering something for you across this, you know, 2.5 hour arc.
Wow. So we didn't talk about this ahead of time. We just have a short time left. Were you guys going to do a little scene for us? Then we should get on and do that. So does somebody want to set that up for us?
I think it's going to be obvious. Actually, Elise, you should do your little speech first, and then we'll jump into the boys.
Okay, great. Okay. So this is Elise Jacobs, Ev Lunning, and Zach Thomas doing a scene from Austin Shakespeare's production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh, Big Daddy. Oh, Big Daddy. In all these years, you never believed I loved you?
Huh?
I did. I did so much. I did love you. I loved you in your hate and your hardness, Big Daddy.
Wouldn't it be funny if that was true? Brick, why'd you do that?
Do what, Big Daddy?
Wipe her kiss off your mouth like she spit on you.
I don't know. I wasn't conscious of it.
That woman of yours has a better shape on her than Gooper's. But somehow or other, they both got the same look.
They look as nervous as cats.
That's right. They look like a couple of cats.
As nervous as a couple of cats on a hot tin roof?
That's right, boy. Like a couple of cats on a hot tin roof. Funny, you and Goopa being so different would pick the same type of woman.
We both married into society, Big Daddy.
Crap. What gives them both that look?
Well, They're sitting on a big piece of land, Big Daddy. 28,000 acres is a pretty big piece of land. So they're squaring off on it, each determined to knock off a bigger piece of it than the other whenever you let it go.
I got a surprise for those women. I'm not going to let it go for a long time if that's what they're waiting for.
That's right, Big Daddy. You just sit tight and let them scratch each other's eyes out.
You bet. I'm going to sit tight and let those sons of bitches scratch their eyes out. But Gooper's wife's a good breeder. You got to admit, she's fertile. Hell, she had them all at supper tonight. They had to put a couple of extra leaves in the table to make room for them all. She got four now and one on the way.
Yep, number five's coming.
She'll probably drop a litter next time. I tell you, Brick, I swear to God, I don't know the way it happens.
Wait, what happens?
Don't you get you a piece of land by hook or crook? Things start growing on it. Things start accumulating on it. And till, before you know it, it's completely out of hand. Completely out of hand.
Okay, we have to stop you because we've totally run out of time.
That was so awesome. Sauce.
That was great. We just have time to find out the details. When do you guys open?
Why, we open on Saturday night.
That's November 16th, mm-hmm. And yeah, you go and you run through when?
We have a preview on Friday, and we go till December 2nd.
December 2nd, and for more information, where can folks go?
AustinShakespeare.org, please.
Awesome. So we are going to just reiterate what who we just talked to. That's Ann Ciccolella, Elise Jacobs, Ev Lunning, and Zach Thomas. They're in Austin Shakespeare's production of Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, November 16th through December 2nd at the Long Center on the Rollins Stage. More information, AustinShakespeare.org. I was going to get there. And we just have time to say goodbye. So remember, offstageonair.com. You can get us on iTunes and stick around. If you're on the podcast, listen to Backstage at Offstage. If you're on terrestrial radio, Austin Monitor News is next. And we will be right back. We're going out with something that's not a show tune, unlike us. But
it's
here we
okay.
go.
This cat's on a hot tin roof. This cat gonna shake it loose. This cat, I don't get the blues. This cat shaking on a hot tin roof.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Schlub. A one-person show starring the incomparable Irving R. Feldman in his quintessential role as Irving. A schlub.
That one number, Schlubby the Schlub, that was the Schlubby show the Schlub. Stopper of the night.
Yep, Schlubstein marches on.
Yeah.
Was the 11 o'clock number. Well,
someone
here we are.
Schlub over me. Wait,
someone to schlub over me. We have a couple of people that decided to be brave enough to venture outside the stage door here at the theater and come stand by the
yes,
the
I feel very
dumpsters.
Brave and glad
yes.
to be here.
And
thank you.
So that voice that you've been just listening to is Mr. Craig Caney. Hi, Craig.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Lee. Don't hurt me. Stop.
You sound like,
me, Lisa.
You sound like
it.
A very old, cold person.
Yeah, but the best part was is he was waving all meekly.
Yes.
And
well,
like, hello, Lisa.
Don't hurt me.
People on the video cast will be able to see it. We also have Bhopal. Hi,
yes,
Bo.
Yes, and Bhopal. Which is
and Bhopal.
How I'm credited in most of the place I appear.
That's always good.
Not a special guest star.
The person
I was
that,
about to say, the
whenever
last person
and,
that says and,
yeah,
that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So both of you, Craig, you've been back here with us backstage before.
Yes.
So so we don't really
it's
have
been a while.
It's been a while. So we don't have a whole bunch new to learn about you because we always we know about your backstory.
And nobody wants
so
to know.
So what I like to talk about to people that have been on before is finding out what kind of passions that you have outside of the world of theater. So feel free. Which one of you wants
there's
to start?
There's life outside theater?
Really?
What?
Yes.
What? There are friendships, people?
There is life outside your apartment.
Well, actually, I think
extra credit if you know what show that's from.
I was just about to say that's from a show.
Well, yeah, I think we kind of share comic books.
Yes, yes. We are both
superheroes.
Comic book fans.
So you're both comic book fans.
Were you very upset with the passing of Stan Lee this week?
Oh, man.
I mean, you know, if there's anybody who's kind of embodied the whole thing for, years now, it was Stan. And yeah, it's just like, It's going to be like very. I'm going to get a little verklempt when they come out with some new Marvel movie, and he's not, you know, being a stripper in a DJ club.
His son or daughter said that they were going to continue on some of the characters they had just started working on.
Sure.
Patrick Page put a beautiful post out from working with him on Spider-Man the musical. I put a really great post with Stan Lee on
there.
Yeah, 95.
That's the thing about Stan. Like, he's got theater ties. He's got movie ties. He's got, you know, it's like every pie there was in entertainment, he kind of had a thumb or a finger in at some point, you know, even if it wasn't spectacularly successful.
Yeah.
You know, he was there. And just like everybody knew he was the man.
Yeah. And books, certainly you know, comic books and Marvel superheroes have been around since the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. But
I know exactly when the Marvel Universe started because it was the same month that I was born, November 1961.
1961.
That was when the first issue of Fantastic Four.
Today! In comic book history,
but it has taken off in incredible ways in the past 10 years or so.
Yeah, it's great to see all this that I used to get beat up for. Like,
but it's crossed over into theater. I mean, when Andrew Garfield won his Tony for Angels in America at the Tonys, he made his comment. You know, everybody knows him from playing Spider-Man in the movies, and he said,
right.
"I brought people came to the theater because of someone from a comic book that had never been to the theater."
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
And so, you know, it is that weird crossover of worlds.
No, I mean, it's great to see, but it just, it makes it funny that I kind of have read all this stuff in like the late 60s, early 70s.
Comic books are
so
cool.
Talk about your interest in comics. Where did they, for both of you, when did that begin? From like early boyhood?
For me, it was only childhood. So I was an only child, and my parents found out very quickly that they could pretty much set me in front of the old spinner racks, if you like, back in the day.
Oh yeah,
in
grocery
stores, grocery stores, anything like that. They had the spinner rack full, like this little spinning wire rack full of comic books, and they found that they could just leave me in front of that, and I would happily leaf through any of that, and they could go do whatever they want, because it was the 70s, and that's how you did childcare.
And Bo, did you find yourself waning at all, or have you maintained interest from that point up to now?
I've waned off and on, and some of it has to do with financial stability, because comic books are a lot more expensive.
And I was just about to say,
do you
collect them,
I rarely buy monthly stuff anymore, but I will buy trade paperbacks of stuff that I know I like, and you know, thank God there's also there's the this is the age of the Kindle and the e-reader, and I will download stuff to my iPad and read it, which is a kind of a great way to read.
I didn't even realize books were a bit. I mean, there's still comic stores up in New York and Jersey and stuff like that.
We have,
but I didn't realize you could download
that. Yeah, well, there's Comixology is a great site for that. A lot of the, like, DC and Marvel have their own sites. But Austin is really lucky in that we have several very good comic book stores.
So Craig, you had said, and I don't know if we quite heard you do collect. You're a collector.
No,
you did.
I was kind of the same as Bo. But now financially, it's like no way I can.
Well, you still have the ones you did collect.
But a while back, because of various personal family things, it wasn't the old, you know, the parents threw them out. No, they were very understanding about the collecting. In fact, I had about 4 filing cabinets full of comics, pretty much going from the start in the 68 when Marvel did the big expansion, and they like started pretty much everything.
I still
so I had all those.
Some in storage that I have not gotten rid of.
It was great to... what was I going to say about that? Yeah, so I had all that stuff. But how I got started, what you were asking, I think it was probably the Batman TV show.
Nice.
I can actually remember that first
Pow!
Run.
Mm-hmm.
I actually remember watching that first run. And then I think, you know, from there it's like, oh, hey, and there are comics, too. There are books.
It's so funny that you know, you and I grew up in the same era, and I don't, you know, I watched Batman, I loved Batman, but I'd never thought of it as a comic.
Right.
Really? Even with the POW and the BAM and the write-in
comic. Never thought of it as a comic.
Segue.
It was just a TV show. And I was going to ask you, so so comics were not part of my life, other than... Archie and Veronica. I read that.
Yeah.
Comics are part of your life.
They
and that's the misconception
right.
that a
Betty
lot of people
Veronica.
Make is that, oh, comics are superheroes. It's like, comics are everything.
No, Annie people.
I mean,
Little
Riverdale
Orphan
and
Annie.
Sabrina are huge right now, and they're huge because those comics have been around for
that's true.
Years.
Yeah, I was into like the comic strips too.
That's
Dick Tracy
I have
and Little Orphan Annie and all that.
Dick Tracy's were some good ones, yeah.
Yeah. And that has carried through. It's part of my life right now, and because I'm directing Fun Home, which is based on graphic novel. And so graphic novels, not a style that I enjoy reading.
Really?
I
love Dykes to Look Out For, which was Alison Bechdel's strip before she did Fun Home. Is one of my faves.
There is, by the way, a compilation that she put together called The Existential. Dykes to Look Out For. I just learned that yesterday because I was over at Book Woman, who carries all of those books, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, our generation has made, you know, comic books and like bookstores and stuff like that. That was only like maybe some comic strips like Pogo. Yeah. And even then, like collections.
Book people, like all of the locals, there's a dedicated section
for graphic novels, which is amazing. I do find it though; it's difficult for me to read. I had to read Alison Bechdel's graphic novels, and it's not a genre that go. It takes me longer to read a graphic novel than a fully.
So is it because you get pulled into the pictures and the imagery, or is it just because your mind, there's the disconnect because it's not just reading the words.
It's two levels of stimulus at the same time.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I'm pretty simple.
Here's my question. If you could be a superhero, what superhero would you be?
Oh, boy. Tough one.
I mean, when you read all these.
This is like if you do, because I do podcasts and we talk about, this is one of the big questions that always comes up. It's Superman. Come on. Who else would you want to be?
That's my brother.
He's got the best. It doesn't matter because people are like, well, I'm not a big Superman fan. It's like, who cares if you're a fan? He's got the best power set. There's no getting around that.
I want Wonder Woman. I do love the Lasso of Truth because Mama wants to know.
Yeah.
All right, wants to know. Craig, you?
Oh, Superman. Superman. I mean, come on, because you got all the powers. You can do anything.
What about you, Lisa?
I don't know. I do not do superheroes, so
well,
I don't know
what
I'm...
From the ones you know, what would you want?
I don't know.
Would you like Spidey senses?
Honestly...
Are you Betty or Veronica?
Oh, I'm Betty.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was easy, but that's not a superhero.
That's okay.
But thank you for getting me off the hook.
But it's comics.
But I don't. It's odd. I do not know. I haven't read any of the superhero comics, and I only saw the very first Spider-Man, and I've never seen it. And I'm not interested. It does not interest me.
No, I haven't seen the movies either because, like I said, I read all this back in the 60s and 70s.
But you really never saw any Superman movies?
Not one.
Not one. Christopher Reeve.
I tried to watch the original Christopher Reeve not too long ago, and I couldn't. I didn't see it when it came out.
Interesting.
I saw the trailer.
Well, it's like, you know, some people don't like sports.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's just like
some people don't watch every Pitch Perfect movie.
Right.
Some people, though, do like comic book sports and theater.
I'm one of those people. Well, you like everything.
I don't like everything.
That's true.
That's true. And I will let you know when I don't like it. But I try to look at the world as there's always something good out of everything bad. Even if you get stuck in this little teeny town somewhere, but there's always has to be something good, and I just want to find the good.
There was even some good.
If
distance.
I had the lasso of truth, I'd find it quicker.
All right, so let's talk. Let's bring this back to theater for just a little while. So, of course, we know we're going to keep comic books and theater together. So we know about Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Annie.
Superman the Musical, which a lot of people forget.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
And actually, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a Superman, is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
What else? What other theater things have come from?
Oh, there
I guess You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Good Man Charlie Brown's another one.
Fun Home, obviously.
Fun Home, yep. What a great... Let's just talk about those five we've just mentioned.
Yeah.
Very different.
Annie's probably the early one.
And...
Speaking of musicals,
I am a huge fan of the Robert Altman Popeye movie. I love that movie.
Okay, I'll say okay, but it wasn't a musical, was it?
It was a musical.
It was with Robin Williams.
No, I know who it was with.
Harry Nilsson did the.
Okay, I didn't remember it being a musical.
But there are, you know what? There are more musicals and plays that are about superheroes, and I don't know why I can't. There was one like 3 or 4 years ago, and you and I were talking about
it. That would be Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
No, it wasn't Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, and it wasn't The Fun Home.
So, well, we came up with five just off the top, and they are very, very different.
Very different eras, too.
I think it's more common that movie people making movies go to that well a little bit more.
Sure.
But there are a lot of, you know, there's tons of non-superhero oriented comic books out there. You know, Fun Home is a great example.
Yeah,
lots
now.
Of really incredible autobiographical work.
It's so funny. I think of comic books and graphic novels as different genres, but I don't think people that follow them think them as different genres.
No, because nowadays, like, even the comics, you know, comics used to be a very disposable form, and now once people started collecting them, you've gotten to the point where they pretty much take every you know 5 to 6 issues of a run and put it into some kind of trade paperback. So that's just kind of the normal way that a lot of people read comic books. Like, I don't buy individual issues, but I'll go in and buy a collection every now and then.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, we got to run. We got to leave the backstage. I have to do a quick plug for Fun Home opening December 6th.
When?
At the Ground Floor Theater. Tickets are pay what you can. We want you to pay $30. We want you to pay more, but if you can't pay, we want your butts in the seats. Groundfloortheater.org. It's looking really, really good, folks. So come and see it. Obviously, we don't have the same rules here backstage that we have during the show.
So please come and see our play.
Yeah, come and see Great Expectations. Not please. Just make them come and see it.
Come see it. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, you may as well go see Cat on a Hot Tin Roof while you're at it.
Sure, why not?
There you go.
All right, Big Daddy says so.
I was just about to say Big Daddy says so.
And Big Mama's nodding along, and Brick is right there too. Well, thank you guys for coming back here. We'll see you next time. Bye.